This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
I'm Christina Musan.
In for John Broski today again. I'm Blake Taylor. Hi.
This morning, the big news seems to be the Facebook Oversight Board issuing its decision on Facebook's ban on former President Trump. Mm-hmm. Some clarification to our promo here, because you were a bit confused, Blake.
I am always confused, Christina. Thanks for bringing it to the public's consciousness.
I want to clear this up with people, because I look at this ruling and I say what the oversight board said is you can't kick the can down the road. Okay, that's how I interpret the ruling this morning. But let me put it this way for you. What the board ruled is that Facebook had the authority in January to ban President Trump's account. They had the reasons.
In perpetuity, forever, right?
Well, that's the problem here.
Okay.
Not in perpetuity, because what they said is you had, at the time, there was precedent. You could do it at the time. But now you need to make a decision. So you have 6 months to make a decision on what you're going to do here. So you're either going to ban him forever, or you are going to let him back on. You've got 6 months to make a choice.
So we are almost exactly 4 months past the riot at the U.S. Capitol.
And they've got six more months now to make a decision, Facebook, on what they're going to do permanently.
But isn't that exactly kicking the can down the road?
That's what I'm saying. Well, but that's my point here is that they're giving them a deadline. It is kicking the can down the road.
Make up your mind.
This is, quote, Facebook cannot make up the rules as it goes. That's what they say on the board. Facebook cannot make up the rules as it goes. Anyone concerned about its power should be concerned about allowing this, the board said in a statement. Having clear rules that apply to all users in Facebook is essential for ensuring the company treats users fairly. And I agree with that. So what they're saying is now you've got 6 months to make up your mind to make a choice. Do an investigation. Do whatever you've got to do. Go for it. In the meantime, President Trump now has released his own platform for getting his message out, and that's on his website.
And you can
link.
You can link to President Trump's website or his stories or his thoughts and
on Facebook and Twitter. So you can go to his site, which is from the desk of Donald J. Trump, right? Yeah. You go to donaldjtrump.com/desk. And that's where he, quote unquote, kind of tweets, I guess.
Well,
He posts.
And he already went after Lynn Cheney this morning, right?
Right.
Was that the first one?
Liz, yeah.
Or Liz Cheney, sorry.
9:51 a.m. this morning. Happy Cinco de Mayo, by the way. Warmonger Liz Cheney, who has virtually no support left in the great state of Wyoming, continues to unknowingly and foolishly say there was no election fraud in the 2020 presidential election when in fact, and he goes on, right?
Okay.
He has not lost any, you know, of his oomph, let's say, during this period of time, this 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He is back at it, and you can link to it on Facebook and Twitter. I don't know if Facebook will do anything to you for linking to it. I have absolutely no clue, but maybe that could come next if they want to. I don't know.
He's been posting a lot. I'm on donaldjtrump.com/desk right now. This is what he had to say about this ruling this morning, posted at 11:21 a.m. today on this Cinco de Mayo 2021. Quote, quote from President Trump, quote, what Facebook, Twitter and Google have done is a, quote, total disgrace and an embarrassment to our country. Free speech has been taken away from the president of the United States because the radical left lunatics are afraid of the truth. But the truth will come out anyway, bigger and stronger than ever before. The people of our country will not stand for it! Exclamation point. These corrupt social media companies must pay a political price and must never again be allowed to destroy and decimate our electoral process. End quote. So you can gather that and just click on the there's a Facebook link, there's a Twitter link, and there's a heart, which would obviously indicate you love the post by.
Right. Now, the
DJ
thing that
Trump.
You can't do is talk back and forth with him
on
this platform. It's a one-way communication, not two ways.
But you can shop for merchandise and contribute.
Yes, you
right
can.
At the top.
Yes, you can. So obviously he has not lost a step in this last 4 months.
Yeah.
He is back at it. He's got more vigor, I don't know, than...
Well, he's got some time on his hands.
than before. It's been kind of nice having the quiet the last 4 months. I'm not going to lie, just because this is now feeding the liberal news media that he hates so much.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is all that CNN's been talking about all morning long.
Well, and Fox, too, for that matter. Fox has been all over this, too, because they got the exclusive on this.
Yeah, yesterday.
So, yesterday. Yeah. So, they've been all over this, too. And, you know, Donald Trump is great for ratings. Donald Trump is great for CNN. Donald Trump is great for MSNBC and Politico and all of those things. And they know that. And this is fuel to the fire to me.
Sure. And, well, I mean, not only is he content gold for radio and television, but it also, he's such a divisive character and personality that it really starts to peel away any shroud of non-bias coverage by left-leaning media and right-leaning media. If you've noticed, if you watch daytime Fox these days, how far right they've gone in just the last month, Harris
yes.
Faulkner in particular.
Yes.
You know, she was a very straight line, in the middle, no opinion, news personality, news presenter on Fox, but that is no longer the case. She and many others have decidedly gone to the right and conservative. While we always had those suspicions about her and some of the other ones who always tried to play it straight as a journalist,
yes,
not the case anymore. They have gone completely right, which is kind of a fascinating turn of events in just the last month alone.
Well, I think there are a couple of factors into that, right? You have... after the election, Fox News calling Arizona, right, before anybody else. And that upset a lot of people, angered a lot of people.
Including President Trump.
And it drove up Newsmax's numbers.
Yeah.
Newsmax got more publicity from that election.
And OAN.
And OAN than they ever would have.
Yeah.
And so Fox News fed them some of their viewers. And I think that they're trying to get viewers back and recommitted to that.
They're still kicking the hell out of CNN and MSNBC.
Absolutely.
But, in the ratings. But it's interesting to watch the evolution.
You know, one of my favorite news people is Bill Hemmer, who I followed from CNN with Soledad O'Brien, of all people, who is his co-anchor to Fox.
Blech.
And, you know, even he has been, the right lean has become more aggressive. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because they got the message.
Oh, there! This is
they've
definitely
got the
coming,
message over there at Fox.
Yeah, this is definitely coming down from HQ, from the president's office. Not President Trump. I'm talking Fox News president,
right?
And program department. That they've got to go right, and or if you don't, sayonara. We'll let you go from your contract because it's. I mean, you saw it with Shepard Smith, right?
Right.
When did he leave? Year and a half, 2 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, right.
He just couldn't take the Trump coverage and the right wing talking heads, Hannity and Tucker and those guys. He couldn't take it anymore. He got so fed up that he's I'm out of here. I'm a true news person. I'm going to go and sign a new deal with. He's on CNBC.
CNBC.
I've watched a couple of his shows. It's not bad.
It's not bad. I've watched some too. I like CNBC actually. And I it's a station I actually watch. And it's not bad.
No.
It's fine. It's dated by the time it airs on the West Coast.
Right.
That's, you know, that's the thing. That's what's so great. You know, Fox, you can watch it live. Mm-hmm. You can watch CNN live.
Yep.
CNBC, it just always is dated. Yep.
When they're not playing, what's it, what's the game
Shark
show?
Tank.
Shark Tank.
Shark Tank.
Incessantly running loops of
All
Shark Tank.
All the time. It's the only thing the husband and I can agree on watching, to be honest. Yes, Shark Tank. And I do like me some Marcus Lemonis as well. But speaking of which, though, social media and the former president. Mm-hmm. What are you happy for this new platform? Are you not happy for the new platform? What do you think about this? What do you think about the ruling coming down this morning? Kicking the can, in my opinion, kicking the can down the road 6 more months, but saying to stop kick the can down the road after 6 months and come up with a decision.
So you're going to wait nearly a year to make a decision on whether you're going to permanently ban President Trump from Facebook? Who cares?
Because in a year when they ban him, and maybe it'll have died down a bit. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the thought is here.
How much are you on Facebook anymore?
I'm on Facebook.
I know you are, but how much are you on it? Are you on it more or less than you were, say, a year ago?
Less. Than a year ago? Less.
I'm on it maybe once or twice a week now, and I glance at it and move on. It's nothing but ads and crap anymore, and a few occasional cool pictures from family members. That's it. I've lost complete interest.
So what do you like?
I've really abandoned social media for the most part in the last since January 7th.
Really?
Since
January 7th?
Look at my Twitter feed. I've probably posted one thing since January 7th. I just can't take it anymore. I got so
I could tell you what
rankled.
It is. Thanks for the birthday wishes.
Yeah, that's about it. That's about it.
That's about
I think I posted something in February when we were in Cancun.
Yeah.
On Facebook, and that's probably the last time I've even bothered dealing with it. It doesn't do anything for me anymore. It used to be cool, but now it's just garbage.
Social media, you personally, where does it stand with the former president? Where does it stand for you? I personally kind of appreciated his little vacation from social media, just a little bit of a break from. He is just constantly on it. It's almost obsessive to me. I think maybe it is for him. I think it might be a little bit of an obsession. He says that it's his way to communicate with the people, which that's true. It's a direct way to communicate with the people, but it's almost obsessive to me.
It's an ego stroke.
They say on average, we spend just checking our phones 3.5 hours a day, just glancing and looking at our phones.
3.5 hours?
3.5 hours a day, glancing and checking our phones.
Wow, that's a lot.
That's a lot. So that tells me that there are people still checking something.
Well,
and I don't know what you're checking, but you're checking something.
Plus, during the shutdowns, during the pandemic, I mean, that had to just skyrocket phone usage of screen time, all of that. If you're sitting at home, you're bored, you're not working, you're not doing your homework, you're not in school. A lot of free time on a lot of American hands, worldwide hands over the last year and a half. So, yeah, that's interesting. 3.5 hours.
3.5 hours checking your phone.
All right.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Christina, you're a mama.
I am.
What do you expect on Mother's Day? What's as a young mother of two, wife of one, what do you expect from the
wife
hubby?
Wife of one. From the hubby, nothing.
What?
Nothing.
Really?
Yeah. It's fine. We're going to go to church in the morning.
Okay.
We're going to go to brunch after church.
All right.
Sit outside. Hopefully it won't be too hot. Then we're going to go to a friend's house for dinner.
No gifts? Flowers?
No, I bought myself gifts. I just, you know, it's kind of one of those things that I just, my husband and I have agreed. Like, go get what you want. I'm not going to sit around. I don't have time to be thinking about like what you want. So just go buy what you want and be happy.
But it's the thought that counts of your partner, isn't it?
You know, like there was a year, my poor husband, he has it rough. Because
really?
There was a year he bought me flowers and I yelled at him for buying me flowers on Mother's Day because they jack up the prices.
Oh, yeah.
And
do.
I was like, do not buy me flowers on Mother's Day. Do not buy me flowers on Valentine's Day. Go buy them like in August when nobody's buying flowers and get that, like get a good deal. So that's just,
You're just frugal that way?
I am frugal. Yeah, I am.
But
absolutely.
You don't have any expectations of a doting husband and/or children.
I may tell him like I'd like a couple hours to go shopping without children.
Yeah. Okay.
Like I'd like free time to myself.
Mommy time.
Yeah. But other than that, I have no expectations of anything.
Well, you're one in a million then.
Typically,
I'll
I follow this group on Facebook. Speaking of social media, because that is kind of what we're discussing. 490-5858. Do you still use it? And I follow this group on Facebook of Fresno moms. And everybody's talking about like, how do you balance celebrating your mom and your mother-in-law and yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And I, I kind of wanted to reply, like, I don't know. There's no balance to it, because by the time you celebrate your mom and by the time you celebrate your mother-in-law, there is no time left for yourself. And so it's just kind of this random question of, like, moms just don't get celebrated, kind of.
Well, that's what
I'm
Mother's
always
Day
celebrating
is for.
Other people.
That's what Mother's Day is for.
So this is what I told. This is what I told people in my life.
You should demand.
I am going to be at this place at this time. And if you want to show up, I would love to celebrate you along with me. But other than that, don't expect very much from me, because it's just, I love you, and I tell you I love you all the time, and that there's this one day to do that for you is kind of like why does it have to be one day to me? So I do it all the other days, and this day I'm going to do what I want to do and not do what everybody else wants to do.
Okay, well, that's
so that's
fair
just
enough.
Kind of my thing. Okay. I am selfish on Mother's Day, and I just say I'm going to buy myself gifts.
Okay.
I am going to go. I'm going to do what I want to do.
All right. Well, what are you?
And I'm going to be selfish.
Have you purchased your Mother's Day gift for yourself yet?
No, I haven't, because I do have a little bit of guilt about buying it. But I know what I'm going to buy. I'm going to buy a swimsuit.
Okay.
Because I don't ever do that. That's what I'm buying myself. I'm buying myself a swimsuit.
All right.
Swimsuits are expensive.
Are they?
And I'm too cheap to buy myself a swimsuit. But I'm going to buy myself a swimsuit. Because my kids love to spend the summer in the pool.
Yeah.
And I have one. I have one swimsuit.
Okay. You have a pool at your house?
Two. We do. Now, okay. We do now have a pool at our house. Yes.
Nice. I'll be over.
So, you are welcome to come over. So, it's... I am selfish.
Got it.
And I just... Don't worry about me.
You know what?
Give me 2 hours.
You know, with the onset of the pandemic in 2020, a lot of get-togethers were obviously called off and canceled, mm-hmm. as we all know.
Yes, yes.
Including Mother's Day last year. So what we did, because my mom is in Albuquerque, right?
Right.
And she's a widower, and so she's by herself and just lonely. So we got her, normally, I would have taken her out for dinner if we lived in the same town, right?
Right.
Normally, that's what you do. So we bought her dinner from Red Lobster, I think.
Amazing.
Delivered.
I love it. Yeah. Had it delivered to her.
And did a FaceTime and had dinner together.
That's really sweet.
Yeah.
I love that idea.
So
that's a great idea.
Really nice last year. So I have no idea what I'm doing this year, but we'll figure it out in the next 48
hours. Well, I think you should make it a tradition.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe you should make it a tradition and send her dinner every Mother's Day.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
I just feel like Mother's Day, we should celebrate our mothers all the time, not just on one day.
That's a bit much. Come on. That's a bit greedy.
I have dinner with my mother almost weekly.
It's a bit greedy.
I have dinner with my mother-in-law not bi-weekly, but almost every other week. We're very involved, and they come, they see the kids, and I don't know.
Do you think?
Why do I have to have a day?
So there's this adage, and I know we'll get to news in just a second. There's this old adage out there in the U.S. I don't know if this is a worldwide adage, but being a mother is the hardest job in the world.
It is. It is.
You get to do it in your sweatpants, as Bill Burr once said. It's not that hard.
He was obviously never a mother. Obviously.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
We found out yesterday that Derek Chauvin's attorneys have filed their appeal and request for a new trial. Mm-hmm. They had 14 days to do so. Did you know that?
Yeah, I had heard that originally. Yeah. I think right after the verdict came down a couple of weeks ago.
I think it came on day 14.
Yeah.
They cite a whole slew of things, but amongst the list that they cite of prosecutorial and judicial misconduct, Chauvin's rights to a fair trial, they say, were denied when the judge denied a motion for change of venue. Not sequestering the jury the entire time mm-hmm. is another reason. Publicity during the proceedings threatened fairness in the trial. And then they requested a hearing to impeach the verdict based on the grounds that the jury committed misconduct, felt threatened or intimidated, felt race-based pressure during the proceedings, and or failed to adhere to instructions during deliberations.
See, I think that they may have a good chance of getting the appeal through on three of those issues.
And what are the three issues that you
this
think?
This misconduct crap by the prosecution is nonsense. That's just throwing stuff against the wall. Not sequestering the jury. I think that they should have been sequestered.
So
change of venue should have definitely happened because of the heightened tensions in Minneapolis. In my opinion, I'm not a legal scholar, but that would have made sense, I would think. And three, which is probably the biggest one, is this juror.
So, yes.
I don't recall the gentleman's name off the top of my head. But
Brandon Mitchell.
Brandon Mitchell, that's right. So he was one of the jury members.
He's the guy that's been making his rounds on TV, too.
That's right. It's not often you get named jury members making television appearances in a case
Juror 52.
So high profile.
Right.
But that's not the only reason he's making news, just for appearing on TV.
No.
He's making news because there are pictures floating around of him wearing a BLM, Black Lives Matter, T-shirt. Not with George Floyd's face on the T-shirt, but
yes.
Martin Luther King Jr.'s face on the T-shirt. But it also says BLM on it.
Right.
And that was taken, the photo
says,
was taken at the March on Washington.
And it says something to the effect of, like, get your knee off my neck or something like that. Right.
Right.
Which is referencing George Floyd.
One would assume. You can
One
make that connection.
Assume. This juror number 52 is how he was identified during proceedings. But he's making his rounds on TV, Brandon Mitchell. And he says that he answered no when asked if he'd attended any of these kind of BLM rallies.
And it specifically says BLM rallies, right, in protests.
I'm looking for my no on the jury questionnaire when asked if he attended any of the demonstrations or marches against police brutality.
Okay.
Okay, that's, I guess, the way that it was worded.
Okay, against police
worded.
Brutality. Right.
Okay.
All right.
And he attended this event in Washington, D.C., right? The march on the Capitol, mm-hmm. right? And he said it was for Martin Luther King's I Had a Dream speech.
Right.
However, he obviously has thoughts about police brutality if he is wearing a Black Lives Matter shirt.
Who doesn't have thoughts on police brutality these days?
If you're living
and breathing, you have thoughts on it. If you're a human being, you have thoughts on
True.
It.
True. But here he is wearing a shirt and to the effect of, get your knee off my neck, mm-hmm. something of that sort, right? And which to me is referencing George Floyd.
Right.
So you have thoughts on
sure.
George Floyd, Black Lives Matters. You had pre-existing thoughts on this case before you entered in to be the juror.
So
I don't know. Should he have answered? I think to me the question is really, should he have really answered yes on this versus no? I mean, it's a technicality
right.
that he attended this march, even though it was for Martin Luther King. Uh-huh. Clearly, to me, he was marching for more reasons than just Reverend King.
Yeah, possibly.
So should he have answered yes is my question.
I don't think so.
I think he might get away with this technicality.
Yeah.
But then again, the
judge or the court, whoever writes up the questionnaire for the potential jurors,
uh-huh.
probably should have done more due diligence.
Correct.
And had more uh-huh. questions about, do you have BLM merchandise? Do you wear it publicly?
I think that is a great point that you make. There should have been more follow-up on this. It's gotten more specific. You know, they say that the case is won or lost in A, jury instructions, and B, the jury pool.
Yeah.
I mean, the most important part of the trial takes place before the trial ever starts or happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, this one could say, before you point that finger, point it back on yourself and ask yourself what you could have done better in this situation as to Derek Chauvin's attorneys.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Because you got to pick a jury here.
That's right.
And this guy got through. So what was it about this guy that maybe you should have had better follow-up with him? Maybe you should have asked those questions that you just asked. Do you have any Black Lives Matters paraphernalia in your home?
Mm-hmm.
Do you contribute to or support Black Lives Matters? Do you? I don't know what other questions come to mind. But maybe they should have gotten more specific with these jurors.
Sounds like it, because they're leaving themselves open to this situation and the possibility of an appeal coming through.
Now, to me, if you say, though, that sequestering the jury and a change of venue were important here, I think you've got a basis then for jury intimidation. Because the reason you would move a trial and the reason you would sequester a jury is because of potential intimidation and outside information.
It was the biggest trial. This was the biggest trial since Rodney King and OJ, right?
Like driving home in and out of the protests every day.
Yeah.
That can lead to, so to me, there is more grounds for jury intimidation than there is on this, on Brandon Mitchell, juror number 52.
Right. And when you talk about moving a trial to another city, or another town, Minnesota is a very interesting place. Have you ever been?
I have not, but I know you have.
I have, and I have family there, and in Minneapolis specifically, as well as scattered throughout. But Minneapolis is a big city with an urban population, the biggest African-American population by far in the state of Minnesota, okay?
Okay.
The rest of the state is pretty darn white, and the defense probably would have had very few, if any, people of color on a jury if you were to move this trial into, you know,
suburbs,
a smaller town.
Yeah.
And so that was going to be a problem and probably seen as unfair by the judge. And I'm just reading between the lines,
sure,
on something like that, because
interesting point.
It's chalk in most of Minnesota and most of the Midwest when you get outside of a big city.
490-5858. Let's head to the phones here. Bill, you're on KMJ. Good morning.
Good morning. One news outlet reported about the question that juror was asked about protesting. And the way they reported it was he was asked if he had taken part in any protests in Minneapolis, Minnesota, to which he answered, no, he hadn't, which is the truth. So I just wanted to point that out to you. It was a poorly worded question. They should have asked him about protests anywhere, not just specifically Minneapolis.
Great point, Bill.
I think that's a very good point. And I also think, you know, if this is important to you, this juror wearing this shirt, right, attending this Washington, D.C. protest, you're right, Bill. You need better, more specific questions.
Yeah, and that's on the judge. That's on the judge. He was in charge. And if you're going to compile these kind of questionnaires,
it
seems to be that it was really narrow in scope. You know what I mean?
This is what I don't get about cases like this. You're presiding over a very high profile trial.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that whoever loses is going to appeal.
Yeah.
And is going to ask for a new trial.
Right.
So why are you not doing everything possible to dot your I's and cross your T's?
That's a great point. And plus, think about this. Considering the magnitude of this case, how quickly it went to trial in under a year.
Less than a year.
For a murder trial? That's unheard of. Absolutely unheard of.
President Biden said it was slow. Maxine Waters said it was slow.
I don't want to hear anything from her.
When was the last time?
She's an absolute clown.
Oh, I know. When I was a jury, you know, a court reporter for the TV stations, you were lucky if you got a murder trial in 3 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
In 2 years. Yeah. 2 years was fast.
Yes.
It still is today. Yeah. With COVID, 3 years is fast.
Right. Yeah. They made this happen in under a year. It's completely unheard of. I get it. You wanted to resolve this thing quickly and fairly as possible, but it just seems to me that questionnaire was lacking in scope and in precision. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It left a lot of things on the table and a lot of variables out there.
And that's the thing. When I would sit in courtrooms, judges were very specific about being on the record about things and making it very clear, because they knew appeals would happen and they did not want to be the cause of a mistrial or whatever.
Right.
And so they wanted to do everything by the book and to the best of the ability. And in this case, there are a lot of things that seem to be what? Questionable mm-hmm. or leaving the door open for. And so, you know, I don't know, 490-5858, do you think there was juror misconduct in this juror number 52, Brandon Mitchell, in this shirt that he wore? And he wore, and the question that he was asked, he says he answered truthfully that he had not attended any demonstrations or marches against police brutality. Bill there on the phone said that the question was, is any marches in Minnesota? And he said no.
Right.
This march was in Washington, D.C. It was for Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. But yet he's wearing a Black Lives Matter shirt with Martin Luther King's picture on it. And it says something to the effect of, get your knee off my neck.
Yeah.
And so is there any ground here?
It sounds like he had his mind made up during the MLK march in D.C. It sound by wearing that, you would assume that one had made up their mind about the guilt or innocence of Derek Chauvin already by then, before being on the jury, correct?
That's what it sounds like to me. However,
you could read between the lines and say that and assume that, but you know what assuming means.
Right. Well, and at the end of the day, the question that they ask you is could you be open to all the evidence and hearing everything that is presenting and making a decision based upon that? And if someone answers yes, the court, I guess, just takes their word for it,
and
right?
Let me qualify that statement, by the way. One could assume that Juror Mitchell, Juror 52, had already presumed Derek Chauvin to be guilty by wearing that shirt, right?
Right.
I presumed him to be guilty, too, as soon as I saw the video.
Yes.
A year ago.
I think
I presumed him,
much
and
of
I think
America
a lot
did.
Of America did as well. So I guess I wouldn't have been able to be qualified to be on that jury.
Well, but again, I guess it goes back.
I presumed him to be guilty.
It goes back to the question of, could you sit in that courtroom, listen to the evidence that was presented, and make your decision based upon the evidence?
And the evidence included that video
included
of nine
that
and a half end. Minutes, right?
And that's what he says. He says that video was kind of the only evidence that he needed. And I think...
And we all saw it already.
For much of us, it was.
We all saw it a year ago when it came out.
You know, for me on that case, I think the prosecution... The best piece of evidence that they presented for me, Blake, was the 3 minutes where he was lifeless.
Yeah.
And nobody, they checked his pulse. He didn't have a pulse for 3 minutes. And still, Derek Chauvin continued to put his knee on his back, neck, wherever placement
right.
you want to argue it was. That, for me, is enough to say somebody went too far. Things went too far.
And don't forget, we've got the trial of the other cops that were standing by.
Right.
Also on the scene.
We'll see what happens
there. They're going to be on trial as well coming up if they don't take plea deals.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
What are the odds?
I know. I was just going to...
The first three callers...
Of the day.
Of the day today all have the same name.
They're all named Bill. I know... Is that all?
I didn't realize we lived in Texas.
Are these all like, you know, John Smith type names?
All my friends growing up as a kid, because I grew up right near the border of Texas, all of their dads were named Bill.
Really?
And they're all oil field guys. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, kind of redneckish,
right.
But, you know, it was just odd.
Okay. All right. Well, we're talking about the Derek Chauvin trial. And as Blake mentioned, our first caller's name was Bill. And at 490-5858, our second caller's name is Bill as well. Bill, you're on KMJ.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I think one of my fourth.
You're second.
Hey, second. Okay. With this vetting out of the jurors, trying to get a mistrial or you know an appeal. We're focusing on what the attorney, the defense attorney, questions asked and so forth. What about the intent of the process? Okay, the entire intent of the process itself in vetting out those jurors are to weed out unreliable jurors, mm-hmm. those who have a bias against your client. So even if the attorney made a mistake, the whole process was gone through. I'm pretty sure he'd be able to use that claim. So, you know, even though this guy got through, it's his, you know, vote that counted because he slipped through the process. the process is there to weed him out. This was not fair because it didn't work. No matter if it's his attorney or, you know, the prosecution knew about it, it's the process. What is the intent? The second one is, I don't think this guy would get a fair trial anywhere, even if they moved it to another city.
Yeah.
And here's the reason I say this. When you get Ann Astor showing up saying, well, we need to be confrontive, who's she actually talking to? Is she actually talking to the jury that's sitting on that trial right now or at that time and the judge? Well, did the two issues with that. One, if the judge heard that comment from her and responded to it, then he's willfully admitting he heard that comment, and now he's been tainted. He knows what will happen if he doesn't give the max sentence. There's another reason he might get an appeal.
Well, and I think that goes into the jury intimidation aspect of this. Thanks, Bill.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Bill, thank you for calling up. Hold on. You're on KMJ.
Hey, Bill.
Hello.
Hi.
Am I on? Am I the third Bill to report?
You are the third Bill.
Bill the third. What's up, brother?
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to call back in reference to a caller that was concerning Brandon Mitchell, the 52nd juror.
Yes.
In his questionnaire. The first one was, did you or someone close to you participate in any of the demonstrations or marches against police brutality that took place in Minneapolis after George Floyd's death, which was a specific city in this? But the second one that he answered no to was, other than what you have already described above, have you or anyone close to you participated in protests about police use of force or police brutality? And I believe when he was caught with the pictures, he was in Washington, D.C.
Right.
The second question, not specific to the place, but the first question was specific to a place. So he answered no to both of those. So there's got to be there's a clarification that there was more than one question asked about his involvement in marches or demonstration or protest against police use of force or police brutality.
Right. But the march that he went to in Washington, D.C. was the MLK Jr. Annual March on Washington, which is for equal rights. Basically, the focus was not on police brutality. However, obviously it was mentioned from time to time at the march, but it was not the sole focus. So, go ahead.
It was there though. I mean, anything, even though it wasn't that was in Minneapolis, because that was the place of George Floyd's death, but it participated in protests about anything that was about it. So if anyone showed up that he wanted to voice his opinion on or protest or demonstrate on, he definitely made that clear by the apparel that he was wearing and his stance that he took. Even though it wasn't Minneapolis, it was somewhere else. So the question was no, the second question.
All right, Bill, thanks for the clarification on that.
Yeah, and we detailed that earlier on in the program. You may have missed that, but we did get into the details on that.
Bill number three, by the way.
Thank you, Bill, and Bill. Yeah. Appreciate your calls on that. You know, it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see if the defense attorneys can go through and make this appeal happen for Derek Chauvin.
Sentencing, by the way, is June 25th.
Okay, June 25th. Okay. Got it. And don't forget, there's, what, three or four other cops that...
they've got trials coming, too.
Former cops.
We'll see if any deals are made with them, though.
Yeah. I would imagine plea deals aplenty about to come down. That's just my guess, gut instinct there. But you never know. Some of those guys might actually take their chances with a jury trial.
Now, coming up in a couple minutes on the show, in about 5 minutes, we're going to have Nick Willis join us. He's from the Native American Guardians Association. And we're going to talk to him about the Fresno High School Warriors situation. You know, I don't know if you remember or not, because this story kind of took place in the heart of COVID and the shutdown that it's kind of just skimmed by.
It started last spring, I believe, if I recollect correctly, right?
There was an online petition started by somebody not in Fresno, not alumni of Fresno High School, not associated with Fresno, somebody that just does this type of stuff, and starts online petitions
doing
for schools that have Native American mascots.
Okay.
Okay. And so he started one for Fresno High School Warriors. And that got the attention of the Fresno Unified School Board. And the school board voted, I guess, December 9th of 2020, that it was going to change the mascot.
The warrior mascot.
The warrior mascot.
Okay.
And there are a group of alumni now that are not happy about this. They don't like it. And they have filed a lawsuit. One in specific is the namesake of the lawsuit against Fresno Unified. But they filed a lawsuit against the school district saying that the Brown Act was violated in doing this.
Interesting. Because it was not the Brown Act is if you hold a meeting in secret, correct, or private.
Right.
Without public participation
Correct.
Or knowledge, right?
Right. So let me read this to you, because first of all,
you've got a stack of papers over there. It looks like just came out of a law
office. The lawsuit is 105 pages long.
Oh my Lord.
I did not print 105 pages worth, okay? I just printed the beginning, the bare basics of this. And what they say is this: there are four major issues at part. Number one, the school board's minutes specifically state changing the Fresno Warrior will have no fiscal impact.
That's
and
incorrect.
Yet we have learned since, right, that it's going to cost the district anywhere between $400,000 and $1 million to change the Fresno Warrior mascot.
Okay.
Okay. Number two, during the school board's presentation, it specifically stated that no vote on the Warrior would take place until school reopened. And instead, the vote happened December 9th when school was not in session.
Okay.
Okay. Number three. School was not open on December 9th.
Right.
That's number three.
Yeah.
Okay. And number four, the board's vote fails to provide any meaningful information. No mention of what the Fresno Warrior will be changed to, the cost of the change, which they talk about in subject number one. And it fails to answer who, what, when, where, or why as to what's, you know, going on with all of this. In relation to the Brown Act, they say that it requires that the agenda be posted 72 hours before a regular meeting and forbids any action on an item that's not on the agenda. And I guess that wasn't done and also was voted on when school was not in session, when they said that they would wait until school was in session. The lawsuit also talks about availability of being able to attend these meetings
right.
when they're on Zoom. That not everybody has internet access, not everybody is able to attend, and therefore that is also a violation of the Brown Act.
Seems like a lot of legal loopholes we're discussing today on KMJ, Christina.
Well, it sounds to me, you're right, this is kind of an in-the-weeds type of thing. But at the end of the day, this lawsuit alleges that the Brown Act was violated.
Okay.
Okay.
And I get that. Now, December 9th, the kids were not on Christmas vacation or winter break, whatever it's called these days, right? School was technically still in session, but online only.
Correct.
Okay.
So I don't even know, though, if school was in session on December 9th or not. Like, did they break? I didn't look that up on Fresno Unified's calendar.
Right? I'm going to look it
up. So I'm not sure. But yes, if they were, quote unquote, in session, they were virtually.
December 9th was a Wednesday.
Okay. And according to the district's calendar, though, were they on winter break during that time?
No way. I mean, the winter break would have started on probably the 21st of December.
Okay. I mean, you're a parent of a school-aged kid. I have no clue.
But they were definitely in school, online, virtual learning on December 9th, which
okay.
was a Wednesday.
Okay.
Their winter break's not for another 2 weeks after that.
Okay. So, but they were virtual learning. So
yeah.
We're getting into the issues of this. This lawsuit's been filed. I do not know when it is set to appear in court. The district is going to have to defend itself on that. Fresno Unified's attorneys say that the motion wasn't filed in time. So therefore, this point is moot, that this lawsuit wasn't filed in time. But you got to love this. The attorney that filed the lawsuit says, I don't think it's smart to argue too late during a global pandemic.
Good point.
That's a pretty darn good point.
Great point. We'll find out how this all is going to turn out. And our special guest is coming up in just a moment here
yes.
on KMJ. So when we come back, we'll discuss this and break it all down and what this means for the alumni and the current students of Fresno High School. Will the Warrior mascot go the way of the dodo bird? Is it the right thing to do? Is it even offensive?
Well, and so, you know, we're going to talk
with... That's the other thing about this.
Exactly. We're going to talk with the Native American Guardians Association. And Nick Willis is with them. He's going to join us when we come back and get their reaction just to this.
Yeah.
To the changes underway, too.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Joining us on the phones now is Nick Willis. He is with Native American Guardians Association. Nick, thanks so much for joining us as we discuss this issue involving the Fresno High School Warriors. First off, what do you think of all this? What are your initial impressions of what's going on here in Fresno?
So what I think is going on here in Fresno is cancel culture. What's happening here in Fresno is happening across the world. Many schools are going through this change, and my thoughts are that instead of eradicating proud tradition and proud history, why don't we focus on educating and educating about Native Americans? There's many great things we can do with that and educating, you know, people on Native American culture instead of being the first people to just cancel everything. Why not educate?
So the warrior mascot was chosen by the students of Fresno High School 130 years ago, and it's been there ever since until the school board in December, in a possible violation of the Brown Act, voted 5-1 to cancel the warrior mascot. Do you find any of the Native American mascots at any other schools offensive, like the Redskins or anything like that?
So... I don't support Native American mascots. I think a mascot is someone dressed up as a sideline entertainer, like Chief Wahoo. But I support images or symbols, and I believe that Fresno has a respectful image and symbol, and they do not have a mascot.
Now, you have something going on today. The board meeting is tonight. Fresno Unified's board meeting is tonight. And you have something going on before the board meeting. And are you going to speak as well at the board meeting? What's happening?
So we are having a rally from 4:30 to 5:30 today at Sunnyside High School. And we're going to be rallying, and I'm going to be speaking at the rally, and as well as at 5:30, we're going to be walking into the meeting as well, and we are going to I'm going to be speaking at the meeting as well as many other supporters here in the Fresno area.
I have to ask, you know, as I think about this, because you said it's, you know, it's one thing to dress up and literally be the mascot, like out on the field or walking around campus. That's one thing. The image is not offensive. It typically, because this is Fresno, as you know, Nick, is not the first city in the nation to do this. I'm sure that you have spoken at other school boards as well. What are some compromises that you find to be acceptable, and what have other districts done?
Many districts across, even in California, we have the Ripon Indians. They decided to, we've spoken with their school board as well, and they have decided to get a certification from our organization. And we've done a little history about their tradition, and we were able to certify them, and we're in the process of certifying them as well. And then this is just one of the many schools in California that I've had the privilege to speak with. And that's one of the ways we can.
What does certification do, though? What does that do?
So we'll certify the school. We basically go through an evaluation of their name and logo. We go through and we have our organization reevaluate how long they've had their tradition, whether they have an offensive image or not. And we basically, you know, certify them. And we talk with them about our education curriculum. And that's pretty much what that's about.
Well, tell us about your organization, NAGA, Native American Guardians Association. What do you do besides certify schools and make sure that they're in compliance with not being offensive when it comes to Native American imagery?
So currently we're in the process of an education curriculum that is being developed that many schools are going to take us up and learn about Native American education and culture. And that's one of the ways we also We also believe in our motto, educate, not eradicate. And that's one of the ways we do help many of these communities keep their traditions and learn more about that.
Yeah, and you know, there are a handful of incidents and situations in American history that are well documented, like the Trail of Tears, but there are a lot of things that American kids grew up not knowing about the Native American population. What are some of the stories that you focus on when it comes to curriculum, and how well received or not well received have school districts been to implementing a Native American education curriculum in public schools?
I don't think the schools have been as good as as we did back in the day. I think with this now, this cancel culture movement going on, I think that a lot of these schools are starting to realize that it's time to educate about Native Americans and continue to look for ways to help educate our future and the kids now in school. And I think, you know, we need to focus on education. I think that's a very good thing to do.
So when it comes to Fresno High School and the warrior image, you find the image to be acceptable. You don't think that image needs to be changed. Is that correct?
That is correct. I don't think it needs to be changed. I think that Fresno High School has a proud and respectful image, just like many schools across the United States.
But instead, what you would like to see the district do is adopt curriculum to educate the students on Native Americans and what a warrior is, I'm assuming.
That is correct.
All right. So this afternoon, 4:30 at Sunnyside High School is where the rally is going to take place. The board meeting starts at 5:30 at Sunnyside High School as well. It is going to be held in person. Anything else you want to add, Nick, before we say goodbye?
Yes, I just want to offer some advice to the Fresno Unified School District that they need to rethink their position on retiring the respectful image. I think they need to go and educate people and not be so quick to get involved in this cancel culture movement that is sweeping across the United States. And I think they need to rescind their vote, look at the facts, have a fair and honest and transparent debate, hear both sides of the issue. And I think once they hear the facts, that they'll make the best decision they can. I think that right now they think they're untouchable, but the communities, they have overturned school boards. We've seen it across the United States, and Fresno Unified School District, this is just a small thing, that issue. And I think that if they rescind their vote, they're going to save themselves a lot of trouble at the end. And also, I would invite people to check out our website, nagaeducation.org, and learn. And there's a lot of great facts on the website as well. And if there are people out there listening, I would encourage them to get out and show your support today at the rally. And I appreciate you for allowing me the opportunity to be on and to voice.
Yeah, Nick, thanks so much coming on the program today. And we'll keep an eye on the situation at Fresno High School and tonight's school board meeting. The rally starts at 4:30, like you said, at Sunnyside High. Nick with NAGA, the Native American Guardians Association, nagaeducation.org is the website. You know, before the show started, we were talking about prepping for the program today, Christina. Not only is the Fresno High Warrior logo in the crosshairs here, but we saw the Redskins became canceled by state law. Two years ago, it was passed in Sacramento and signed into law that they had to get rid of the Redskin logo, mascot, what have you, in a school in Tulare and one in Chowchilla.
Yes.
I believe. The Sanger Apaches, which is interesting, they changed their logo recently, right?
Yes. So the way that they word it is that they, what's the term that they used? They refreshed. okay. Their
the logo of Sanger High School.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yes.
I'll give them. I will say this: yes, it needed refreshing because the logo looks like it was hand drawn by a 6-year-old 100 years ago. The old logo. The new one is just clearly a ripoff of the Kansas City Chiefs arrowhead with a giant S and Apaches across it. Which is fine.
I think it's what they call it.
Yeah, I think it's a better brand look, personally. But the old one wasn't offensive. It just looked like a kid drew it. But that's my opinion.
Yes,
no offense to Sanger.
So
High.
Sanger Unified is still, you know, Sanger High School is still the Apaches.
Right.
And
they just got rid of the Native American fellow on the logo.
Right, they got a new logo.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Rick, you're on KMJ.
Hey, folks. Being Native American, I had to grow up at the tail end of the 50s and the 60s with images that were thrown at me that were basically white people with blue eyes in these bad, you know, wigs saying that they were Native Americans in everything we watched, from television to movies.
Yeah.
You know, I had to see Chuck Connors as Cochise. You know, we learned to deal with that. My grandmother was a great teacher. She came to all my classes and taught us about being Indian and what it was. And what we did was we ended up accepting these terms that are considered now as racist, like redskin. I'm from Chowchilla. That term is not a racist term. The way the city and the school itself, it showed it as something to be proud of.
Yep.
The Chowchilla Indians disappeared. They were no longer. And everything I learned about the Chowchillas were at war with us from the Mono Nations, and we constantly fought with them. But there was also a what they taught us and what my grandmother taught was you can be proud to be a Redskin. It was a term that we used as a descriptive term. This is who we are. This is what we are. And she taught about our cultures. And there were other terms that I got in trouble last time I talked about this, that it used the N-word and applied with red and prairie and mountain. Now, that's racist. But the term squaw, come on, really? That's an acceptable term meaning woman, and it came from the Midwest, from the tribes there. In high school, I used to go to these meetings with Indians that were famous, like Chief Dan George, Red Carl Westerman, we learned about these things. I asked him, I said, is this racist? And the only one that said that kind of it was to Redskin was Fred Red Carl Westerman. He said, it's not really a good term. And I said, but it doesn't put us in bad light. It just tells us that we have red skin. There's nothing wrong with that. He didn't really agree with that, but my grandmother did. Now, this NAGA is kind of, well, we're going to give you credence to say that you are part of it. I don't agree with that. I agree with if you show respect to it and you use that image, you can use it. It's not like you were talking about the Sanger image was drawn by a 6-year-old. Yeah, that, I can't get into it. Now, when it comes down to the mascots, we had respectful mascots. They understood what this was about. I was even asked in high school by the mascots, do you find this offensive? And I said, no, you're just showing pride. Now, my brother was a mascot for the city, and that was called Tomahawk. And the reason he got it was because he was a real honest-to-God Indian.
Yeah.
And he went to all these parades, and my father took pride in making his costume.
So you make some very good points there.
Yeah, Rick,
I think,
thank you for the call. We got to move
you,
on,
Rick,
though.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing is to me is that I get why a district might want certification in today's world for their logos.
Yeah, it's interesting. This NAGA group comes in and certifies schools. Okay,
and I don't blame them because we live in a world where we want. Almost that kind of certification.
You need that blue check mark?
This is potentially, here we go. It's potentially controversial. So I need a group that's not one-sided one way or the other to put a stamp of approval on it. And then we can say, and we have an education arm to this as well, where the students take such and such and such and such pay so much time, and they learn about this stuff, right?
Right.
I can understand that.
I love the aspect of the educational angle here of getting Native American history and events on the public school curriculum. I think that that's absolutely warranted and should be studied by our kids in school, in particular, probably junior high and high school level, so that they get a better knowledge of what in the world happened here.
Right.
You know, Columbus Day is being canceled left and right across the country. And it's going to Indigenous Peoples Days.
Yes.
In most places in the country. The nickname, the logo Redskin is going away. It was canceled in California first by state law.
Correct.
The Washington football team is no longer the Redskins anymore.
Correct.
The Cleveland Indians are getting rid of their nickname in the coming next few seasons, baseball. You know, who knows what's going to happen with the Atlanta Braves down the road. Numerous colleges, the Seminoles of Florida State. You never know what happens there.
Your list is longer than mine. I didn't even know some of these.
Well, the St. John's used to be the Redmen. St. John, New York City. You were there, right? They were the Redmen while you were in college. Now they're just, they're the Red Storm now.
Okay.
So, I mean, this has been happening and happening and happening over the past decade or 20 years or so, two decades.
But in wiping the slate clean, what we're doing is not even learning about it. You know, is that...
Well, isn't that what we did to the Indians in the first place?
Right.
In this country?
So here we are, we're going through and we're just wiping the slate clean of these things instead of learning about...
Embracing it.
And, well, yeah, but... And also, though, learning about why terms are offensive, right? Why, what happened, the history behind things. We are in such a cancel culture right now.
But
God forbid you say or do something.
Ironically, this is whitewashing. This is whitewashing.
It is whitewashing.
Native American culture and pride. It really is. It's
very true.
It's whitey coming in Sacramento or at City Hall. Or at Sunnyside High School and Fresno High School, and you know, canceling things because we think that it may be offensive, as opposed to pride and showing something in a really strong, powerful, good light, like the Fresno High Warrior, right?
Yes. So I just we'll see what happens tonight. We're obviously going to follow this. And you know, let's take a quick call before we go to break. 490-5858. Vanessa, do you have any thoughts that you want to weigh in really quickly?
Yes, thank you, Christine. Actually, I'm a Fresno High graduate.
Okay.
And like you, I'm a Fresno Indian, if you know that what that term means.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, to our listeners, that means an Armenian because we were the indigenous people of Southeast Turkey. Okay, so let's move forward because I've been on this since the beginning. This is part of a larger narrative. And what they're trying to do with Fresno High is roll out a social justice club, which they want to have as a model for the whole district. And it's done by a few people with big loud mouths and a few ragtag groups that aren't even Indian, don't even have Indian blood, never went to Fresno High. They're here basically to disrupt the system. And what they want to do, they're out of compliance with genocide studies. You know, they were supposed to roll that out 3 years ago, and they never did it, 10th grade and up. They're also out of compliance with ethnic studies, which... They were supposed to roll that out 4 years ago. Now they're going to replace it with what's called the critical race theory and Project 1619, mm-hmm. which ostensibly teaches the same thing that these social justice clubs teach, that anything written by white people is a white lie. White history is a white lie. No need to discuss. We'll just destroy it. There's no discussion here. Fresno Unified School District performs at the lowest 5% academically in the nation, in the same bucket as Detroit, Michigan. These people are concentrating on politics and not concentrating on education, which is what they should be doing.
Vanessa, do you agree? Blake kind of made the comment of going and just kind of wiping the slate clean of this, you know, mascot and logo is almost like whitewashing. And, you know, I understand the critical race theory and trying to get rid of white history. But this
Native
is, but,
history.
But no, well, but what she's saying though is to white history is another aspect of this, but also in coming through and just wiping now Native Americans out of this, we're not learning anything about anybody.
No, we're not. I mean, but take a look at what they did to Fresno Armenian Town and Fresno Chinatown and Historical Tower, what they're trying to do. They want to rewrite the history. And it's not a big, large group, but they make a big echo chamber. It's kind of big and involved to get into right here. But the fact is they're doing an injustice to our children rather than learning the culture. Basically what it is, and you and I can relate to this word, it's called cultural genocide. Mm-hmm. Once you get rid of the flesh, you go after their history, their culture, their music, their food. Look at all the towns in Turkey that were Constantinople. They changed the name of the towns even to Istanbul. Smyrna becomes Izmir. This is a cultural genocide. This is the final phase of just wiping it clean and building it the way they want.
Interesting. All right. Thanks for your thoughts and comments on that, Vanessa. Let's see, 490-5858. When we come back, talk a little bit about homelessness before we say goodbye.
Crazy story in Los Angeles, and we'll tell you how it relates here in Fresno when it comes to homelessness. This is one you're not going to want to miss.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Christina, something that broke in the last 24 hours down in Los Angeles, an investigative report from CBS2 out of L.A., they dug into these trailer homes that were bought and paid for with our tax dollars.
Right. Like RVs. They're RVs.
Yeah, they're RVs. They're trailer. And Governor Newsom spent $50 million of our taxpayer money on all of these trailers.
Well, you know, we have a surplus.
To give to cities and counties in California to deal with the homelessness crisis during the COVID pandemic. Well,
what's LA doing with them?
Let's check this out.
David Goldstein investigation. With so many homeless people on the streets, we found millions of dollars worth of trailers that were supposed to house the homeless going unused. And David Goldstein is here with what he found out. Dave?
Pat, apparently they haven't been used for some time. We found more than 100 camper trailers that were supposed to be provided to the homeless sitting unused, each costing taxpayers just under $40,000. We found them parked in at least three lots across the city collecting dust, all this while thousands of people are living on the streets.
With the backdrop of the city of L.A., where more than 40,000 people are living on the streets, we found dozens and dozens of travel trailers, gifts from the state to house the homeless and get people off the streets in your neighborhood. But these trailers aren't being used as a home for anyone. They're empty, parked side by side, like in a used car lot, locked up in this yard next to Dodger Stadium. And at the L.A. Zoo, we discovered another lot with close to 40 trailers. The sign says vacant. The trailer's unoccupied after millions of state taxpayer dollars were spent to help the homeless, but now collecting dust.
To just let these trailers sit there and go to waste is hard to comprehend.
Daniel Conway is with the L.A. Alliance for Human Rights. They successfully sued the city and county to try to end the homeless crisis. As a result, a federal judge has ruled housing must be provided to residents of Skid Row.
What do you say to the city when you look at trailers that are just sitting there not being used?
It's absolutely heartbreaking, given the immediate need of so many of tens of thousands of people in L.A. To see those free resources from the state just sitting there unused.
Governor Newsom donated the trailers last year to cities across the state. They cost California taxpayers $50 million to purchase 1,300 trailers from FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. 10 went to St. Joseph's Center in South L.A.
It's interim housing, but is absolutely home, yes.
They use the trailers to transition people from the streets to more permanent housing.
It does really allow for privacy and a really nice way for families to get back on their feet.
Could you use more?
We could use more.
But here they are. We did see the fire department towing a few trailers to use for mobile vaccination sites, and other city departments, we're told, are also using them. But that's it. We found the city of L.A. did spend more than $1.3 million taxpayer dollars to repair and install 316 trailers for the homeless last year. But that project was stopped at the end of the year.
There's real hope on the horizon.
In his State of the City address, Mayor Garcetti pledged $1 billion to combat the city's homeless crisis. but a spokesman with his office told me the trailers are just too costly to use because they have to be hooked up to water and sewage lines and constantly maintained. It's cheaper, they say, to put people up in hotels.
Can you believe that?
So how much money was spent on these?
Well, $50 million
total
for the state. So I did some research. I talked to some sources at City Hall yesterday.
Okay.
You're in Fresno.
Now, we got some,
right? City of Fresno received 28 of these trailers in all.
Okay.
The city turned them over to the county of Fresno for distribution. They did that to the Poverello House, to the Rescue Mission, and a couple of other places in around town, okay, to deal with the homeless. Now, what they are doing with them is utilizing these trailers for COVID testing for the homeless.
Yes.
And recovery.
Great.
If they become ill.
So they're actually being used here in Fresno.
They're actually being used. So kudos.
Thank
you. City of Fresno. The county of Fresno, nice job. The health department as well for the county of Fresno. Our tax dollars are actually being used for the purpose of which they were meant. So good job.
Thank
local
God.
Officials getting the job done. And by the way, when the pandemic comes to an end and is officially called to be over by the CDC or the federal government, whatever, those trailers will be donated to the Rescue Mission, to the POV, and other charitable organizations in and around Fresno County.
Really?
Yep. So that's
great
news.
They'll get to keep those and use them for their needs.
That's right.
We do have a great group of resources in Fresno for the homeless. I mean, you know, John and I spent, I think it was Friday, talking about the hotel rooms. Mm-hmm. You know, the story talks about RV versus hotel room. They're right. You've got to hook them up to water. Probably wasn't as good of a plan as a hotel room is.